Welcome to another edition of Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein. When it comes to bold-faced single names, the list is long, and of course, includes Cher, Halston, Madonna, Sting, Bono, Iman, Liberace, Prince, Dior, Adele, and Emmy, my guest today. A leading voice and face in the fashion industry, Emmy, a recognized advocate for positive female body image, has the distinction of being the world's first curvy supermodel, paving the way for women by giving them a platform to feel beautiful and empowered. She was the first model invited to appear before a congressional subcommittee looking into how to increase public awareness of eating and body image disorders. In partnership with her alma mater, Syracuse University, Emmy launched Fashion Without Limits, Changing the Face of Fashion, the first-of-its-kind inclusive fashion education curriculum for young designers. Emmy's not only a supermodel, but a TV personality, businesswoman, creator of her own clothing lines, lecturer, and author. She's written countless articles and four books, True Beauty, Life's Little Emergencies, Morning Has Broken, and the children's book, What Are You Hungry For? Emmy's been featured twice on People Magazine's 50 Most Beautiful list, and Ladies Home Journal chose her as one of the most important women in America and one of the most fascinating women of the year. She was also named one of Glamour Magazine's Women of the Year and Biography Magazine's 25 Most Influential Women. Whoa, woman. What a career. What a life. Did you ever imagine?
No, Sandy, absolutely not. Back in Saudi Arabia, there's no way that I would have thought my life
would
have
turned out this way. Well, wait a minute. You're not going to throw this into the mix back in Saudi Arabia. I did read that you were raised in Saudi Arabia. Mm-hmm. You were born in the city.
Concrete kid in the city, yes.
Did you get lost? I mean, how did you go to Saudi Arabia? How'd you get to Saudi Arabia?
My grandfather was involved with Standard Oil when my mother was growing up, and she was born in South America, and she and her family moved to Italy. They moved to Cairo.
Wow.
And he, in his home in Connecticut, I remember all the different artifacts which he should not have taken, but many of the people he was an archaeologist for Standard, and he said, you know, just drill here and just... Anyway, it was a really magnificent time. And when my mother got married for the second time, she said, why don't we live in Saudi Arabia? I mean, I know that we could work for Aramco. We'll travel all around the world. And my grandfather, I believe, made a phone call. And all of a sudden, I had shots in my arm. A big, huge container came to our front door. And everything in our life was put in it. And then we didn't see it for 2 to 3 months. And then we arrived in Saudi Arabia. When the door of the airplane opened, it was the longest flight ever. The enormity of the heat, it was like a door slamming in your face. Mm-hmm. And I was very, very young. I was 7.
What was that like?
This is... true.
Okay.
When you arrive into the airport, it was rudimentary, and women would not stop touching me because I had really blonde hair.
Oh, you must have been such an anomaly.
It was odd.
Mm,
it
yeah.
was very, very odd. But it was really good because I got free taxi cab rides all the time.
Which
my mother
it.
Was like, you must be kidding. Do not do that. Or my science teacher would keep my hair when I got a haircut.
Oh,
he would
wow.
keep it.
Oh, my God.
And like, hello.
Were you educated in special schools that were for foreigners or Americans?
Multinational school.
Multinational.
And it was wonderful. I really, really had a great time.
So you spend 8 years in this exotic part of the world, 7 to 15, and you come back because that was a universal decision? All of you decided it was time to come back?
We all had to go back to whether it was you were from the United States or England or Switzerland, wherever the people came from, we had to go back and go to high school. There were no high schools there.
Ah.
Yeah. And at the same time of that timing of, you know, you've got to pick a boarding school that you need to go to, and we would be considered returning students back to Saudi Arabia each break that we had. So kids were flying 15, 17 hours. We learned very early on how to be internationally.
So hold on.
Travels.
You go to Kent.
Yeah.
And you sleep at Kent.
Oh, yeah. We're boarding school.
And your family is still in Saudi Arabia.
Many families. But at the same time of my first year going to Kent, my mother falls ill with cancer, horrible cancer, all throughout the body cancer. So my family, they move to Houston to an affiliate hub of Aramco, and they are living there. And my mom passes away my first year at camp.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there
believe
was.
Me, I know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So early on, I didn't have that returning student experience, although most of my friends did. But the interesting turn and twist of myself as a young woman, leaving a culture that women had to be shrouded, had to walk 10 paces behind men, and then coming into and living in a home where body was so important and eating too much, eating too little. There was body dissatisfaction, body dysmorphism. There was like dieting beyond, and there was a problem with my stepfather and my mother both being dieters. So within the home, in a very, very interesting culture, outside of our confines of the compound, women were oppressed, and stuff was going down in my home where the American culture was being brought in on being this body perfect, and in order to get a man, you have to be ultra thin. But I was an athlete within the boundaries of the compound. I was succeeding. I was a popular kid, enjoyed people, my friends. But my body as a physical athlete was superior.
Yes.
So there was all this kind of really juxtaposition.
But you weren't slight and you weren't thin.
No. I was born a size 12.
I say that too about myself. So you, because as I mentioned in the introduction, you get a scholarship to Syracuse. And so you're a jock.
Yes. I mean, I still am. I swim like crazy. I mean, yeah.
But I understand in the home, there are these mixed messages that are being delivered. And then you're lauded for your physical prowess and your body at a university, you know, get a full ride. And then when did things start to change?
When I left, it was beginning my questioning of my existence as an athlete. Don't be too strong, don't be too big, because men won't be attracted. They might be threatened.
Because you didn't have a lot of role models back then. Not that you're old, but you were just at the start of Title
IX. Title IX. Oh, I thank God for Title IX, because I walked through the doors with Title IX.
Exactly.
Hand in hand, and I really, being older now, I look back and I say, man, my life changed because of Title
IX. No kidding.
I was really—
You're validated.
Really mm-hmm. lucky. But when I was in college, there was this— You know, I was leg pressing like crazy amounts of weight and bench pressing because we were all being trained.
Well, did we say that you were on the crew team?
Yeah, I was on the crew team.
That's where your scholarship
important.
Was for rowing.
Yes,
for rowing.
Crazy
that.
Sport. Mm-hmm. Love it. Mm-hmm. Like it's a truly incredible sport. When I left Syracuse and I didn't have a coach, I was left with myself to take care of the vessel, the body, mm-hmm. and to grapple with all the conflicts that were around me, whether it was in magazines, whether it was my friends talking about themselves, and I couldn't quite understand. And then all of a sudden, the oppression of women of where I grew up from, I started going, we have rights here, and we're not taking advantage of our freedom of our life. We don't have to be shrouded. Why are we personally shrouding ourselves and chaining ourselves, hobbling ourselves physically as women to not just accept who we are? Like I could never become something different. I wanted to major in philosophy. So I was like out there thinking about myself, like why am I beating myself up that I am not at that high level, Division I, pre-Olympic level? Aren't I good enough?
I was just going to say, didn't you feel you were good enough?
I am. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. why is that little thing going on? So the brew was stirring, building a feminist in me. It came from the yeast, the mother yeast, the beginning of that was in the home, the conflict of what was valuable.
Yeah, but did you find yourself alone and without community in these thoughts? I
mean, yes.
Who did you share all this with?
Me and myself. And, you know, I went through a series of, it was really very confusing at first because women weren't really talking about this stuff. And I was wondering if I had an eating disorder or I didn't, because I would sometimes not eat enough. Sometimes I'd eat too much. Sometimes I wouldn't eat. And I'm thinking, why am I doing this? I left reporting. I was a reporter at an NBC affiliate in Flagstaff, Arizona. I was a page at NBC in L.A.
After you graduated.
I took a one-way ticket to L.A. I wanted to be the next Johnny Carson. Mm-hmm. I just loved the way he was with
mm-hmm.
people.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned so much from years and years of just listening to what he would share and how he would bring out different interviews with everyday people. I just loved the way he was. And so I got a beautiful chance to work on the show and assist and all that. But I took all my savings and I sent out all my 3/4-inch tapes. I got a job offer in Jackson, Mississippi. I got a job offer in Flagstaff, Arizona, and then I got a job offer in Palm Springs, where Bob Hope. And I thought, you know what? I want to go to Flagstaff. I worked there for 2 years and realized that news, daily news, was not allowing me to sleep at night. So I took a one-way ticket to New York, and I fell into the modeling industry. When I did that—
All right, no. Okay. No. I'm going to interrupt first because I got a couple of questions before we get there. But first, let me say, if you're just joining us, my guest today is Emmy, a supermodel, businesswoman, TV personality, and, of course, a leading voice and face in the fashion industry. Let's just touch on the physical. All right. What clothing size were you when you started out in the business in reporting? Were you a big woman?
I was a size 12 in the industry, and I'm 5'11". Yeah. I'm really built.
Mm-hmm.
When I sat on the anchor's desk, the fashion of the time was with these big shoulder pads. And I didn't know at the time that you could cut them out. But I never got a chance to sit with the male anchor, because my shoulders
were bigger than his.
Were as big
mm-hmm.
or was wide or as bigger than he had. And so I was the weather girl, I was a general assignment person.
But why did you get hired being that size? And I'm not painting with a super broad brush.
I did.
I mean, you're a very beautiful woman. So obviously
that
worked in your favor.
That helped. But I really, really wanted to be a reporter.
Yes, so what?
I loved it. Well, I applied the recommendations that I got from Network News because I worked on the desk there as a, you know, running around and being a page. But
okay.
I showed my effort and they, you know, people wrote recommendations. In fact, I got such a bad reception driving and coming into KNAZ TV because there were telegrams being sent. They were just, you know, good luck, you know, have great. They're like, who the hell is this woman? That's ballsy of her. Like, what the
hell?
Well,
you didn't send the telegram.
No, I didn't. But I drove up with the big U-Haul and the woman that I was supposed to be staying with, the anchor at night, she took one look at me in the dark with my little Honda-matic.
Mm-hmm.
Being dragged.
Mm-hmm.
She goes, you're not staying with me.
Because?
I don't know. Even to this day. I will. And she goes, you can sleep on the floor.
Okay.
And then you'll find your place in the morning.
Does she feel threatened by you?
Duh.
Yeah. All right.
You know.
Let's deal with the superficial.
But I don't like giving up.
Apparently. Grit woman. Let's still deal with the superficial for
yeah.
a second. When did you know that you were a very attractive female?
Oddly enough, in Saudi Arabia, I knew.
Well, you were an anomaly, like I said, in Saudi Arabia.
Well, that wasn't. I wasn't given that kind of attention ever in New York City.
Well, you were only 6 or 7.
I know. So walking into that kind of an environment, I was like, "This is weird." I thought it was very strange. It didn't make me feel good. But when I went to high school, my mom had just passed away. I kind of pushed away, early, absorbing too much of like, "Oh, you're beautiful." When I got into New York, when I took that one way, when I came from Flagstaff and I moved into mm-hmm. New York, I would walk down the streets of Manhattan and I would have people turn and look and
mm-hmm.
go, wow, that's interesting. And there I was, 20, not even, I didn't even feel this way when I was a reporter. But when I came to New York, I was like, well, and my girlfriend said, my brother has a girlfriend that's working in the full-figured industry. I go, what is that?
Mm-hmm.
And this is 1989.
My point exactly, yes.
And I go, what is that? And she said, well, she's a size 12, 14, and she's working like a crazy woman.
Do you believe it?
Yeah. And I said, seriously, you don't have to lose weight? So I was working different jobs, and I, on a whim, with a polyester black and white pantsuit and a patent leather belt.
Oh, you knocked him dead, huh?
Red unibrow
uh-huh.
and red lipstick.
Mm-hmm.
And I walk into this agency, and it was on a lunch hour. No one was there except one woman, and Susan George, and she looked at me. She goes, don't stop. Don't move. Don't do anything. And I worked with them for a few months, and then I moved over to Ford Models, and the rest was really, truly history. I took a little break because I couldn't stand the way women were treated, both straight size and full figured. in the modeling industry. And my booker, Patty, was like, your chart is completely full.
So bite the bullet, shut up and show up.
Get your ass in here. Mm-hmm. And then I got 50 most beautiful people. And they were looking for a communicator of the new beauty that was emerging. I go, we've been here. We have always been here. And so as a size 14, 16, that's when I really started to work around the world, communicate the issues, and then I aligned with the National Eating Disorders Association and took in their messaging, and it nourished my soul that I was not alone, that I was not the only one that was confused with true love, self-love, versus societal carving and dicing and, you know, putting us into little boxes that
accepting
most of us didn't.
All of those categories.
Yes.
There. I'm focusing on this because despite the fact that it's 2016, I'm smacking my head here. So there's Amy Schumer having to defend herself. You know, there's still not a complete acceptance of this.
Cindy, are we completely forgetting one thing? Money that's being made off of our backs by feeling insecure. A lot of money is made on people, men and women. A lot more men now are getting pulled into that cloaked, mysterious pull of like, well, if you want a woman or if you want to look great, take these products. They were not pushed. Men were not like the focus that women have been on the focus for so long. But slowly, men are being pulled into this, and the eating disorder clinics have gone up with fathers, uncles, and young sons. Mm-hmm. It just reflects that. So when you go to data, always, that's the background. I always go to data. I want to see what's happening in reaction to what's happening and how much money. Now, for the first time ever, the diet-related industry has slowly declined from being in the hundreds of billions and billions of dollars.
Well, here's the
based on a 98% failure rate, by the way.
Well, I mean, I've been there and done that, and I've tried to conform to what everybody says you should look like. So this is also very personal for me. Is curvy girl the politically correct term?
I love that you asked that. When I get introduced on CNN, I just say model or supermodel if that's what they want to use. I said, you don't have to put plus in there because it's quite obvious that when you take one look at me, you know that I am not a twig. Mm-hmm. And you wouldn't say to Claudia Schiffer or to Cindy Crawford, the thin, uber thin model.
Well, that would be just unnecessary.
That's why I'm saying it's unnecessary to say curvy, because obviously when you see Ashley Graham, you should never say the curvy model, the curvy supermodel. She is a supermodel. Mm-hmm. Ashley Graham is the hottest thing right now. Mm-hmm. And there's about six other young ladies that are hitting it out of the park and making our country have a wider aperture, a wider lens
of
acceptance through just showing up and being their beautiful, bright, wonderful selves.
But at the risk of deifying you, do you feel that you were the forerunner?
I'm a godmother of this. I feel like I'm like a tante.
Okay, who was there before Emmy?
And who was crazy enough to be before me?
Well, no, but that's not the point.
No, no, you know? I really felt in deep inside of myself, I am still a communicator. I'm going in. I have a new book coming out in January called Curvy and Confident with the Chicken Soup for the Soul group. Mm-hmm. I'm getting back into clothing, which is really, really, really exciting and active wear we're going to be starting with. I want to be able to bring joy into movement and in a very, very large way and mass way of stop trying to think that you have to count calories to be healthy or to. You do, obviously, but not in the way that we're taught, but to be aware and mindful. So, yes, I was at the very beginning. And yes, I did open a lot of doors. And I used my voice because it was impossible to quiet the voice.
You know, in spite of what might have gone on in your home in Saudi Arabia in terms of mixed messages or whatever, you have to acknowledge, or at least in my opinion, you have an amazing sense of self.
Thank you.
Well, it's not a compliment. I think it's a fact.
I think it's a fact, and I think I was born that way. I look back and I go, where did that all come from? My mom was a really good woman, and she loved me really deeply and did everything she could. She had two jobs in New York City. She worked very, very, very hard, and she went through some really incredible times. And I think with that example, I found that I could do more than what I might have expected. But I think I came into this world being a communicator for this. I know that I'm in my flow, and even though it's really frustrating sometimes, I feel that we're making progress.
Once again, if you're just joining us, my guest today is Emmy, who is, well, just really famous and really fabulous and a leading voice and face in the fashion industry. What have you imparted to your daughter, and what's your daughter like?
Oh, that's, you're so sweet to bring Toby up.
How old is she?
She's 14. She's going to be 15. She was just invited, and she participated in the junior national team rowing development camp.
Oh, the acorn doesn't fall far, huh?
She's taken that acorn, and she's making it totally into her own oak tree. She's really groovy. She's cool.
So what have you done to
foster? She goes to Kent as well. She's been very, very successful there, and
so you're a very personal role model, in addition to being a role model for people who don't know you as intimately.
The most important production that I have is my daughter and the kids that are in my life. I'm goofy. I'm the really strict mom at times. I have boundaries, and I also explore and drag as many young people with me wherever, you know, we go. I get invited to go to so many different interesting in different places, and I'll take them to white tablecloth dinners and do manners with them, you know.
Yeah, but what do you do with them about body image?
I'm
really focused on
this
because this is really, in this day and age,
it's really
still, yes, it's critical. And nobody's, is that evolved? We're not that many people.
We're coming, we're getting there. We have to be positive.
Okay,
we have to
sure.
Be positive.
Okay.
They see me dress and be confident with shoulders back, and they see my work, and they also see that in my work I don't have disconnects, so I'm not going to be working with diet-related product industries, even though they offer millions of dollars, dear God, and please.
You mean you have your scruples?
Yes, I do. You know, I really don't want to promote cigarette campaigns, and there are certain things that I just haven't, but I go swimming with joy. I don't sit there and cover up and go, oh, my God. You know, but because I've got what I've got. Yes, I have cellulite. Yes, I have curves. Yes, I have boobs. Celebrate what you got. And if you sit back and just eat bonbons and do that or not eat anything at all, both sides of the fence, you're not really you're not role modeling for your friends, for your daughters, for your sons. And if you're making it all about food, then you're losing the value of who you are as a woman. When I have a dinner party, I love having the wine on the table and the candles and the ambiance and excellent food, the best food possible, and take our time.
I wonder if people can't help but project, as in, wow, she's really big, or she's really overweight, and how could she possibly—
Well, people tell that to me all the time.
How could you possibly have a full— Well, you're different because you're really pretty, you know, and you're really successful, but there's still that bar.
Oh, yeah.
Were you surprised that you married, that you dated? Were people—
Oh, no.
Yeah, I mean, see,
I
that
knew.
She goes out with somebody,
oh,
you know?
Yeah.
I mean—
Well, the funny thing is that there are comments on certain blogs or wherever, you know, if I'm on certain shows and you see the comments. There are people that are so angry that I am successful.
Oh,
they're so
Mr. and Mrs.
mad.
Anonymous, right?
Oh, they're so, what the hell? You're fat, you're this. And I just see through that, through all the years of therapy, thank God for therapy, and also the work of taking a look at why we do what we do through the National Eating Disorders Association. You learn that if someone is not able to accept and embrace who we are as, as diverse people, whether it's ethnicity, which, hello, we're having a problem here in our country, but also we're born extra small, small, medium, large, and extra large. And then you have different body types, ectomorph, mesomorph, endomorph. I mean, you mix that all up. How are we supposed to be all the same? And I think the fashion industry and the modeling industry is slowly,
glacially
seeing that if they don't change, the curvy girls are not going to shut up. They're really like, stop doing this. We need to see not only curvy, but we need and healthy curvy. We want to see the whole variety of who we are reflected in our advertising. There's checks and balances that are slowly I mean, it is really unbelievable that there's such resistance. But Sarah Ziff I'm going to think of her Model Alliance. Mm-hmm. She is the CEO of the Model Alliance, and she still is a model, straight size model, and she is an advocate to getting checks and balances within the modeling industry to make sure that young women, very young women, are not working, or if they are working, that they have a representation on the set, and that they are not below weight.
Europe is further ahead than we are about that.
They're working on it. Yeah, Spain and France. They're working in Israel. But wherever there's going to be a rule, there's always going to be a bend to that rule.
Duh.
And so it takes parents to be involved. It takes managers to really take a stand. And it takes an industry as a whole to impart this change for the health of their employees or their models and their actors. And it takes time, but I cannot believe we're here at 2016 and we're still talking about.
That's how I feel, but
diversity.
You do feel optimistic.
Yes, I do, because a lot of changes happen. And understand, once again, the bottom line is money. Where there's a lot of money, it's very hard to create change. But slow change, this is a quote that I use, slow change is lasting change. You just cannot stop communicating about it.
And don't make Lane Bryant the only place where I
exactly.
can go buy clothing.
I'm applauding Lane Bryant because they are putting their tuchuses out on the line
uh-huh.
and putting millions of dollars into being bold now. Other corporations follow suit and do your own groovy thing and get out there and show diversity of color, diversity of age, diversity of shape.
Mm-hmm.
But make it healthy and make it interesting and get us back into the stores so that we can feel good. Or do a Kenneth Cole and use your advertising in a really meaningful way.
And
love
powerful
Kenneth.
Way.
I
yes,
love
yes. He's
he
a
does.
Great billboard.
I love,
his company,
yeah.
great billboard. They do a great job. Do you still model?
I model for my own brand.
Mm-hmm.
I have modeled for other companies, but I don't know. I mean, once I walked out and I had to take care of my own cancer. When you leave, it's very hard to come back, but I've already been on trajectory to be my own brand. And so the Emmy brand is out there. We're working on getting an e-commerce site up and running and my Ask Emmy blog and all that kind of wonderful stuff. So I'm coming back now that Toby... I'm not carpool mama.
Yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, I said, well, I guess it's time. I guess it's time to start coming back again.
But you have a lot of fingers in a lot of pies. And I use this term in quotes, and your political work is still very important to you.
Always. Always important.
I guess you'll never run out of advocating.
You have to lobby. You have to go and meet. You got to talk. You got to communicate. And I think that the opportunities that I get to go on national television on a regular basis to speak to not only curvy, but it's the female topics that, you know, women are putting themselves through or a celebrity has gone through something physical, mental about body and
mm-hmm.
always about body image. I do the research, come to the table when I get the opportunity, and I use my voice there constantly. That's a really important part of why I exist.
I think that's a great way to end the conversation
great.
On that kind of a upbeat, powerful note.
Awesome.
Hey, Emmy.
It's so nice to finally meet you.
Well, I feel the same way. And again, these interviews just seem to fly by because I'm so engaged and you have so much to say and you do so much. And it warms the cockles of one's heart.
Oh, that's so sweet. Thank you.
Thank you a lot.
Yes.
Join us for another edition of Conversations with Creative Women, and please go to our iTunes store page and leave a rating and a review. And if you know anyone you think that we should interview, contact us at sandyclineshow.com.